a crucial time in the life of Maharaj Cricket, because in just a few days he will leave this world. So naturally, one would be very, very much an anxiety about what will happen. And that anxiety or that caring about how one should spend one's last days or what will happen, usually it is dealt with in one out of two ways. Either one tries to cover his consciousness deeper with illusion, forgetting what's going to happen, or on the other hand, one becomes even still more sincere and his mind becomes more focused because there's nothing to hold back for. This is it. Just a few days left. I'm going to focus my consciousness. It is clear to me that material happiness really cannot bring anything of value because, after all, it's all flickering and I'm going to leave this world. So Maharaj Prickett, due to his purity, he had summoned the mercy of Krishna, which came to him in the form of Sukadev Goswami, the great personality and great self-realized soul. Maharaj Prickett himself had decided to not go the path of illusion, but contrarily, to focus his mind fully upon Krishna. But the sages who were to be with him during the last days of his life, they couldn't actually answer the question authoritatively. They had differences of opinion asking the question of what should one do as one is approaching death. Some thought perform sacrifices, one said this, another said that, meditation and this, that. But when Sukadev Goswami, who is the mercy of Krishna, appeared, everyone immediately recognized that this person had the authoritative truth in the full grasp of his consciousness, and therefore they offered him the seat of the greatest respect. And when Maharaj Prickett saw that Sukadev had come, he knew that was Krishna's mercy on him, and he asked his question, how should one, what is the duty of one who is preparing to die? What is his duty? What is the duty of everyone, but especially one who is preparing to die? So in response, Sukadev Goswami, and we heard the first chapter, he glorified the question itself because it naturally evokes Krishna Katha, which specifically is the duty of everyone in every stage of his life to focus one's mind upon Krishna. Truly, there is no other duty that we have, because our life is so short, it is temporary, and every other duty that we accept, will pull us away from eternal gain and entangle us in the temporary. While on the other hand, remembrance of Krishna, chanting Krishna's names, engaging in devotional service and bhakti, these, the gains from that and the effect of that is eternal. So it is really a choice, eternal or temporary. With each breath of our life, each step we take, etc., it's either in the service or bringing us closer to the eternal, to Krishna, or bringing us further and entangling us more in the temporary. So, Sukadev glorified Maharaj Prickett's question because he knew he wanted to hear Krishna Katha. And he criticized very strongly those who wasted their lives, the rising and the setting of the sun, as grihamedis, just entangling themselves further in desiring happiness on the material level that truly doesn't bring happiness at all, that only really brings frustration. And then Sukadeva Goswami recommended that as one approaching the end of one's life, one should do what the great sages do, to prepare oneself to focus one's consciousness upon the Lord at the end of one's life. One should become completely renounced. That is the first part. And Sukadeva now is going to explain stages of progression in spiritual life. But the stage or the point of renunciation of material sense enjoyment is truly essential for advancement in spiritual life. And Prabhupada has given the example of pouring water on fire while trying to light it at the same time, engaging in sense gratification and trying to advance spiritually. Because sense gratification, especially sex life, it binds one to the bodily concept of life so tightly. And one's mind becomes feverish in its desire to enjoy. Rather than in Krishna consciousness, one's desire to serve Krishna increases. Krishna becomes in the center. So one should become renounced. One should be brave and fearless, and prepare for his death, the death of the body, by renouncing the world, leaving home, detaching himself from the situations of comfort, and doing what? In the first chapter, the last part, describe meditation on the Virata Rupa, or Vishwarupa, the universal form. Now this universal form is a methodology of seeing spirit in matter, because the universe is made out of gross and subtle matter. But it also can be perceived as part of the gigantic universal body of the Supreme, because nothing ultimately is separate from the Supreme, and the universe consists of Him. So how it consists of Him? That is His universal form. This is the form by which, the aspect of Himself by which He pervades the universe, where He is situated within the universe. So every material thing, whether it's the oceans or the birds or the trees or the rivers or the this or the that, everything can be seen as part of His universal body. And this especially is used by the impersonalist, this what's called philosophized Vishnu or this Virata Rupa meditation. It is especially used by the impersonalists who see that God is everything. This is their proposed vision, how God, there's nothing separate from Him. But then what do? They have to open their eyes and they have to see the things of this world. So how do they see the things of this world as non-different from Brahma, from the Supreme? So that the way they do that is more or less they imagine that this is all part of His universal form. This is how Brahma is everything within the universe. So impersonalists greatly use this. But also, it can be seen that this universal form is an aspect of Lord Vishnu. There is Krishna, and then there is, coming from Krishna, is Lord Sankarshan, and then from Sankarshan there is Karanadakshaya Vishnu, and Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Gaubhadakshaya Vishnu, and from Gaubhadakshaya Vishnu, he enters the universe. And as we'll actually read in the third chapter of the Bhagavatam, the universe, even though the elements of the universe are there, without the universal form or Krishna entering, Gaubhadakshaya Vishnu entering through the universal form, the elements can't be assembled into the universe. It's almost like a documentation for the universe. So to see how Krishna has provided this so that the universe can go on, and in this way, it's not his form exactly, because his Krishna's form can never be material, but in a universal manner he has entered. So in this way, a devotee can see, when he sees matter, he can see this as an aspect of Krishna. So, in pursuance of this, Sukadev continues. And in the first verse, he describes how that this universal form of meditation on the universal form is so powerful that Lord Brahma himself, and this will be described in the 9th chapter and again in the 3rd canto, the 9th chapter of this, Lord Brahma himself, who is the most intelligent and original person within the universe, he could not understand how to create the universe but by meditating upon this Virata Rupa, he gained the realization. So what Sukadeva is doing, he's quoting authority, that he's not just making something up about the universal form. But on the other hand, Lord Brahma meditated on this same universal form, and it is so powerful, this meditation. So, and Prabhupada explains in the purport some very nice points, how Lord Brahma could not understand how to serve when his service was creating the universe. He could not understand how to serve before meditation on the universal form. And in this way, when the living entity meditates on Krishna somehow or another, when his mind becomes focused on Krishna, when he remembers Krishna, his heart becomes purified and he regains the capacity for service. Because the capacity for service is inherent within the living entity. The Krishna consciousness is inherent within the living entity. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai. But it has to be remembered. That's like a person who has amnesia. He cannot remember his identity. But when presented with so many familiar things, things from his past, his deepest relationships from the past, then gradually it may come back. So similarly, when the living entity who has forgotten Krishna is presented again and again with hearing about Krishna, with the form of Krishna, with the land of Krishna, with the name of Krishna, and that keeps circulating in the consciousness, he wakes up. So Prabhupada gives that example in the purport, inciting the authority of Lord Brahma. Sukadeva has brought up the authority of Lord Brahma for the meditation on the universal form. Now, in the second through the fifth verses, the need for renunciation is again explained to Purkit Maharaj. Because there's always a tendency for the living entities within the material world, even when they are on the path, the spiritual path, even when they have adopted the order of the renounced order of life, the sannyas order of life, or even if one is a devotee, and even if one is a religious person, because the allurement of Maya is so powerful, and because our senses are strong, and because the mind is always grasping for material enjoyment, there is such a tendency to become entangled in material enjoyment that Sukadeva very kindly is going to speak very strongly to Maharaj Prickett about it. Because Maharaj Prickett cannot afford to make any mistakes at this point in his life. He cannot afford to doubt or to become attracted to anything other than Krishna, because his life is soon to be over. So out of his mercy, Sukadeva Goswami preaches very, very strongly here. And the first thing he says is that even though the Vedas themselves, the Shastras, at times recommend religious performances in the Shastra itself that are meant specifically for sense enjoyment, one should not become bewildered by those. Triguna Vishaya Veda Nistriguna Bhavarjana. The Vedas, they very much deal with subject matter within the three modes of material nature, although their actual purpose is to bring the living entity beyond the three modes of material nature. Still, because people have material desires, they allure people into following the Vedic system by giving them the fulfillment of their material desires. But the fulfillment of material desires is far from the purpose of the Vedas. Rather, the purpose of the Vedas is the renunciation of matter and the adoption of spiritual desires. Vedas chasavara hameva vidyo. Ultimately, the service of Krishna is the purpose of the Vedas. So, Prickett Raj is warned very strongly that one should not have any materialistic goal, even if it is backed up by scriptures, by Shastra, because that would be a form of bewilderment. And actually, why is it a form of bewilderment? Because why do we become interested in material things? Because we want to be happy. So the bewilderment of the living entity is when he thinks that some material situation, whatever it is, if I have that, I will become happy. And actually, it is quite the opposite. Abrahma bhuvana lokapuna avaturajana. That there is no situation in the material world will make one happy. And Sukadev says, the conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures because the Vedas lead one to more than just earthly pleasures, but heavenly pleasures. But actually, people do not relish any tangible happiness in such places. And Prabhupada gives in the beginning of his purport, he explains in such a poignant way that the conditioned soul is always engaged in laying out plans for happiness within the material world, even up to the end of the universal limit. So we try so many things within our realm. Everyone has a field of activities according to one's karma. We have a realm of action. And according to the particular size or facility that our own particular realm offers, we try our best to become happy on the material level. But we're never, ever, ever satisfied. So Prabhupada says that even if we can enjoy everything within the material world, we're not happy. And even up to the end of the universal limit, to the end, if we had possessed everything in the entirety of the universe, we still wouldn't be happy. And then he gives a classic example. He is not even satisfied with the available amenities on this planet Earth, where he has exploited the resources of nature to his best ability. So this is the goal of the materialistic people, to exploit for pleasure whatever the earth has to offer. But still, even after doing that, after mining the mountains and drilling holes in the sea and mining the sea and squeezing this out of that and that out of this, still, no one is happy with that. So what are people thinking? That the reason why I'm not happy isn't because there's something inherently wrong with my endeavor, But rather, he wants to go to the moon or the planet Venus to exploit the resources there. So it's really true. This is what people... And in fact, in the 70s, after it was sort of a big thing that mankind had gone to the moon, and they were predicting by the end of the century, which is basically now, there would be shuttles to the moon, and they started Pan American Airlines, which has gone out of business, was actually selling tickets to the moon back then. You know, you could be on the first few planes that land there. You can really, you think you're not enjoying now. Well, if you went there, you'd really enjoy. And they were so many things. They were selling the mining rights on the moon, and this is the idea. And some I read somewhere that they were trying with. They have these new laser facilities where they can, using colored laser beams, they can project images for great, great distances without the dissipation of the light. So someone was trying to sell advertising space on the moon, and they were going to project, like, drink Coca-Cola or something on the moon. Can you imagine that? You're looking up there. You know, the two romantic lovers sitting and looking up at the moon and says, drink Pepsi or something like that. Just, it becomes so absurd. Just everyone just looking for every possible facility just to squeeze some pleasure, some money, something out of it. Without understanding that I've tried for so long and still what I have hasn't made me happy, so therefore why am I thinking if I do this new plan that I'll be happy? So therefore, this tendency is so dominant. So Sukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Prakriti, don't become bewildered, even if there's Shastric justification for going to the heavenly planets in enjoyment. Because you're a soul, and the soul can only be happy when in the eternal atmosphere, living an eternal life in the eternal atmosphere. Therefore, in 3 to 5, there is a very strong condemnation of endeavors, more or less any endeavor that takes one's time and energy to maintain oneself. There is a strong condemnation of this by Sukadeva Goswami, and he was really preaching from his personal example, because he would not. He didn't even wear clothes, just completely detached from the body. So these instructions are especially meant for the renunciant, the one in the renounced order of life. But the principle, and especially for the Mayavadis, really it is meant for the Mayavadis, because the devotees don't practice an aversion to material things. Rather, they are neutral in the material world. But yet, we also see in the example of the Goswamis of Vrindavan that they, and even up to the time of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the Babajis in Vrindavan, they were so completely renounced. They did not possess anything material, practically speaking. And Madhavendra Puri, he would not even ask anyone for food. He would wait till Krishna in someone's heart told that person, oh, here is a mendicant and you should offer him food. He would not even ask people for food. What depth of commitment to the spiritual path. And that's the point. That one should have the deepest commitment to the spiritual path and not be misled onto straying from the spiritual path to a path of sense gratification, even if the Shastras say it, like the Vedas. Rather, one should live so simply and use his human life properly. You know, Prabhupada has made some wonderful points in his purports, and we'll read some of those after we go through these verses. For this reason, he starts, the reason being there is no tangible happiness in any place in the material creation. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. Anartha, unwanted things, those things which we desire to satisfy our senses. Unwanted things, unrequired, unnecessary. He should be competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. That means that we try to accumulate something material because we plan and think that it's going to bring me some happiness, but actually it doesn't bring happiness. It brings frustration and anxiety and envy. So now Sukadev gets into specifics, because the question one naturally asks is, how can one find food, shelter, and clothing without making a huge material exertion? Where is this going to come from, practically speaking? How will we live without endeavoring for something material? How could we live? So he answers by saying, when there are ample earthly flats to lie on, when there are flat places to lie on the ground, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? This is really the renounced order of life. When there is ample covering or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? Probably the way that the world is, if someone started walking around in tree bark, it would start a fad. And then, wow, did you see that? If they were wearing sunglasses and looked cool enough. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? What are the alms of the trees? The fruits. Do the rivers, being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered soul? That's the above all. Even if the rivers are somewhat polluted and we live near the desert and there are no caves, but yet, above all, does the Almighty Lord, and He is almighty, that means He has the power to do anything and everything He wants, does He still not protect the fully surrendered souls? So if that's the case, that Krishna ultimately is the protector of someone, in the renounced order especially, or any pure soul who completely takes shelter of Him, then why, very, very strong criticism by Sukadev, then why do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? Oh, Sahib, you are great. You are great Set. You are a big man. Seti. You are great Seti. You are a great charitable person. You support, we are like your children, therefore you are so wonderful, you please give me something. Well, actually, those in the renounced order, as Prabhupada explains in detail in the purport, are not really meant for begging, being a sycophant, being an idol, one who doesn't contribute anything to society, but rather lives off society. Rather, they have great contributions to make. And the begging is a gift to the householder, to engage the householders who are intoxicated by their hard-earned wealth, to engage them somehow or another in doing something spiritual. But their gifts are primarily literary contributions, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that that's the prime duty of someone in the renounced order of life. And also to hold learned discourses. In other words, they should be learned and they should discuss the Shastra and the Shastra conclusions. And they should live alone. Why should people live alone? And this is explained in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam with the story of the Mataji who was wearing two bangles and she was rolling chapatis, and she didn't want the people who were outside to know that she was herself rolling the chapatis. But with two bangles, there was always a clicking together of the two. So as soon as there's two people, there's... So therefore, to stop engaging in gramyakata or gossip or any unnecessary talk, this is again especially for those in the renounced order, and especially also for non-devotees, because the Mayavadis, their philosophy is there's nothing to talk about. He who speaks does not know, and he who knows does not speak. So they especially should stay alone. But the point being that one should learn to depend completely upon Krishna and not depend on others for begging. No, one has to depend completely on Krishna. This is the essential point in surrender to Krishna, that one has to learn to depend completely on Krishna. Why? It's because at the last moment of life, whatever else we depend upon is not going to be there. The example is given that when one is flying a plane, one can get so much instruction on the ground, but when one is actually in the air, he is on his own to manipulate the instruments. So similarly, at the time of death, we will find ourselves quite frighteningly alone unless our relationship with Krishna is open. And then isn't the time to just start opening the relationship with Krishna. No, it should be fully open by then. It is in our own interest to be like that. So those in the renounced order of life, the sannyasis especially, they're known as civilly dead. They have no more civil responsibilities, no more responsibilities in the material world. Their responsibility is only spiritual, their own spiritual responsibility to awaken fully their own spiritual Krishna consciousness and to help others do the same. So completely fearless. That means knowing that Krishna is always with them and they are surrendered to Krishna and Krishna's service. One time in Calcutta, Prabhupada was walking with some of the disciples and he said that when the Victoria Memorial was being built, which is quite huge, it was built by the British in the 20th century, early 20th century. Prabhupada said the scaffolding was there, and when he was a boy, he climbed up it, that scaffolding. And one of the devotees said, "Oh, you must have been so brave when you were young." And Prabhupada said, "I still am brave. Otherwise, how could I have come alone? At the age of 70, just going to a foreign country, knowing no one, having no support from anywhere except from Krishna. So therefore, fully secure and never alone." So Sukadeva has spoken very strongly about this over here. So one shouldn't endeavor for these things. I'll read a few points in the purport. This is to text 4. But here, the idea given by Srila Sukadeva Goswami is that the reserve energy of human life, which is far superior to that of animals, should simply be utilized for self-realization. Advancement of human civilization must be towards the goal of establishing our lost relationship with God, which is not possible in any form of life other than the human. One must realize the nullity of the material phenomena, considering it a passing phantasmagoria, and must endeavor to make a solution to the miseries of life. Self-complacence with a polished type of animal civilization geared to sense gratification is delusion, and such a civilization is not worthy of the name. In pursuit of such false activities, a human being in the clutches of Maya or illusion is in the clutches of Maya or illusion. Great saints and sages in the days of yore were not living in palatial buildings furnished with good furniture and so-called amenities of life. They used to live in huts and groves and sit on the flat ground. And yet, they have left immense treasures of high knowledge with all perfection. In other words, they were not primitive because they didn't have these things. They were so highly evolved. They had great treasure, eternal treasure. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatan Goswami were high-ranking ministers of state, but they were able to leave behind them immense writings on transcendental knowledge while residing only one night underneath one tree. They did not live even two nights under the same tree, and what to speak of well-furnished rooms with modern amenities. And still they were able to give us most important literatures of self-realization. So-called comforts of life are not actually helpful for progressive civilization. Rather, they are detrimental to such progressive life. And one sees that one's list of things that one needs, it never ends. It's not that when one fulfills his list, there's nothing else and that's it. No, there's always more things that one requires. And this way, one's life and energy is frittered away. So therefore, he explains, for your clothing, take the torn cloths, drink the river water, live in a cave, do whatever you have to do somehow or another. Don't waste your energy just living, surviving. Rather, use your human life, your human energy to progress spiritually. So what should one do? What should one do? That's what one shouldn't do. What should one do? One should render service, text 6, unto the Supersoul, situated in one's heart by his own omnipotency, by his own power. He is in everyone's heart. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life. And by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. One can't. The conditioned state of existence means that one is forced to do so many things, forced by the conditions of life, especially just by having a body. It means we are forced to grow old, we are forced to get disease, we are forced to die. But one can't be happy by adjusting the conditions, and that's what we try to do. Rather, we have to go to the cause, and the cause is that we have a material body and we are situated in material existence. And by worshipping the Lord, the Supersoul, one can end the problem at the cause, at the root. That is the point. That is what one should do. Prabhupada explains in the purport here, fairly close to the end. And to search out, the point is, material things, they cannot give us real shelter. We're looking for shelter, for the peace, the security, the happiness. We're like a fish out of water. We are looking for our shelter. So that matter is not our shelter has been explained. Now what is our shelter? That is worshipping the Supersoul, who is in everyone's heart and he is full of affection for us. worshiping Him, and it's so good. Why? Because you don't have to go anywhere. Because He's within everyone's heart. So Narottama Das Thakur said, you don't have to go anywhere. Don't go anywhere on pilgrimage. Just stay where you are and take shelter of Govinda. So Prabhupada explains, and to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we need not go anywhere else, because the Lord is within our hearts. This does not suggest, however, that we should not go to the places of worship, namely the temples, the churches, and the mosques. Such holy places of worship are also occupied by the Lord, because the Lord is omnipresent. For the common man, these holy places are centers of learning about the science of God. And in this, I wanted to read this because this gives, this hints or directly states even what Prabhupada expected the temples to be. Centers of learning about the science of God. When the temples are devoid of activities, the people in general become uninterested in such place. And consequently, the mass of people gradually become godless. So when there's no activities, the people aren't interested in the temples, and therefore they don't come and see the deity. And rather than seeing that God is everywhere, they see that Maya is everywhere, and they become entangled in that Maya. They see sense gratification everywhere. And gradually, the masses of people gradually become godless, and a godless civilization is the result. Such a hellish civilization artificially increases the conditions of life, and existence becomes intolerable for everyone. People say, there's no need to go to the temple, God is everywhere. And Prabhupada's answer was, so if God is everywhere, why don't you go to the temple and see Him? Is He everywhere but not in the temple? But actually speaking, the hypocrisy in that is as though it is a fact that God is everywhere. But people's consciousness isn't up to that standard that they can see Him everywhere. So they end up, He's easy to see in the temple. He's harder to see outside. Instead of seeing the trees as part of the universal form of God, we see the trees as trees. This is the tendency. And everything else is something to exploit. And the final verse we'll read. Who else? So on one hand, there is the materialistic way of increasing life. And then on the other hand, there is the spiritual. The meditation, the thinking about the Lord, the chanting of His names, the focusing of one's activities and consciousness upon the Lord in the heart. But who else but the gross materialist will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only? Seeing, why will only the grossest materialist do this, the one who's most intoxicated? Because seeing the mass of people fallen in the river of suffering as the consequence of accruing the results of their own work, who will follow them? Other than the people, the gross materialist means that someone whose consciousness is so feverish about enjoying material life that even though he sees that the people in general are suffering, he enters and does the same thing due to the grossness and the feverishness of his consciousness. So he's strong, being very strong here. What are you? Will you go this way? Follow the gross materialists, even seeing how much they're suffering? Or do you think they're enjoying? You think everyone is enjoying? Okay, you look. But don't look at the old people and don't look at the sick people. Don't look at the hospitals. Don't look at the chemist shops. Don't look at the people who are limping. Don't look at the poor people. Because when you see them, you see people suffering. Don't look at the young men and the women, young women who are intoxicated and who look like they're crazy And don't look at the people who have just had fights with their boyfriends or girlfriends and are killing themselves. And don't look at the people who have just lost their job. So be very selective. If you want to think that the material world is a place for happiness and don't want to see that people are suffering, be very selective of what you see. In other words, you have to put yourself in great illusion and be the greatest gross materialist, because people see with their minds. They see only what they want to see. So Prabhupada, in the purport, in his purport to this verse, explains that now Sukadeva Goswami has brought it up one level higher to meditation upon the Supersoul, which is a step higher. In the previous verse, it is suggested that one should think of the Supersoul, which is one step higher than the impersonal thought of Brahman, as it was suggested in the case of contemplating the Virata Rupa of the personality of Godhead. So it's interesting. So that Sukadeva, what he's done is, he's quoted Brahma as an authority, citing Brahma as an authority, that he even meditated on the Virata Rupa. And then in the second verse in this chapter, Sukadeva has explained, don't even be bewildered by the materialistic aspects of the Shastra and thinking that some material pleasure is the purpose of anything that you'll do. Rather, you should not become entangled in any thoughts of materialism. Don't worry about how you're going to maintain yourself and how you're going to sleep at night. And know somehow or another you'll be fully surrendered to Krishna. He'll take care of everything. Don't let your mind wander in anything. Rather, what should you do? You should meditate upon the Supersoul. You should be aware of what the materialists have done and how much they're suffering. You should not follow that path. You should just meditate on the thoughts of the spiritual, of the Supersoul. And that Supersoul meditation is higher than the Virata Rupa because it contains more form, spiritual form. It contains a spiritual form, while the Virata Rupa is just basically an imposition of the concept of the Lord upon matter. So you meditate, he says, you meditate on Krishna who is in everyone's heart. So I would like to read from one or two of the lectures that Prabhupada gave on this chapter. He only gave two lectures on the chapter, and both of them were on this fifth verse of the chapter, the one beginning with Chirani kim patinasanti dasanti viksham, are the torn clothes lying on the common road. This is what he says. This is from New York in 1975. Sukadeva Goswami says, Kim ajato vatti no pashanam na avatti upasanam. Upasanam means those who have surrendered. Ajita. God's another name is Ajita. A means not, and jita means conquered. Nobody can conquer God. That is God. God is never conquered by anyone. He conquers everyone. But God is conquered by his devotee, not by the demons. The demons are conquered by God, but a devotee can conquer him. Ajitopi, jitopi, ajitopi, jitopi. Although God is ajita, unconquerable, he becomes jita, conquered by his devotee. That is also stated, Stane stita shutigatam tanovan manovir ye priyaso jito jito pyasitas chilokyam. This process we have introduced, opening centers,
That is the system in spiritual life to hear. Stane stita shrutagatam tanovan manaubhya. Shruti. Shruti means this ear. Oral reception. Everyone may remain in his own position. It doesn't require to change. Just like one gentleman was asking whether for spiritual advancement one has to live in the temple. I said, no. There is no such hard and fast rule that one should live in the temple. You can live anywhere, but the spiritual practices should be going on. Krishna never says that you live in the temple or you go to the jungle or to the Himalaya mountains. He never says. You never find in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says to Arjuna, you give up this fighting and go to the jungle or the Himalayas and become a perfect person. No. Krishna says, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhya jimam namaskuru. You follow this. Always think of me. Manmana mad bhakta. You become my devotee. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhya ji. You worship me and offer your obeisances unto me. These four things. You can do them anywhere. It doesn't matter. But you do all these things. Narottama Das Thakur says, Grihe va vanate tako he garanga bole dako. Either you remain as a grihastha with your wife, family, children, it doesn't matter. Or either you live in the forest like a sannyasi, renounced. And whichever position you prefer, you can remain. But do these things. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yizi mam namaskuru. So here Sukadeva Goswami advises, this is very important work. Kim ajito na avati apasanan. Ajita, the Supreme Lord Krishna, he's maintaining everyone. Yoga chemam vaham yaham. And he'll not maintain a person who has surrendered fully to him. He's maintaining everyone, but he'll not remain a person who has fully surrendered to him? No. How can it be? Suppose a gentleman is maintaining so many other children, and he does not maintain his own children? Surely he does. Therefore our principle should be, we should not think about our personal maintenance. We should dedicate our life for Krishna, and Krishna will take care. That should be the principle. Don't be harassed, thinking always how I shall be maintained. That is not the problem. Maintenance is no problem. The real problem is, how we shall be fully surrendered to Krishna. That is wanted. Okay, we'll stop. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Sukadev Goswami. Sri Maharaj Pakir Siddha Prabhupada ki jai.